Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
All right, welcome back to the BPOS podcast. I'm super excited today. This is the first recording with a guest, and I could not think of a better person to have on this episode for the first guest recording than the man I'm about to introduce. He is a Army Ranger, Special Forces sniper, Green Beret, mixed martial artist, professional mixed martial artist. As a matter of fact, one of the top ranked middleweights in the UFC.
You have to put that in past tense. Like a hard ranked.
Ranked.
Yeah.
Ranked.
Not current. He's old.
He's also somebody who, and most importantly, is a very good friend of mine. We've known each other for about 10 years. And Tim was really, his name is Tim Kennedy. And he was, he's always good at reaching out to me, just in general, staying in touch, but particularly after last year, Tim has been there, and reaching out at just the right moments, and inviting me to come and work out with him. And then, our routine is working out, grabbing tacos and coffee.
That's a pretty good routine.
It's a good routine. And one of the reasons I wanted to have Tim on today is you said something really profound to me the first time we went and worked out after Connor's death. And it was, I've been watching the way you've been grieving from a distance. And you made the point that, while there's really no right way to grieve, there definitely is a wrong way to grieve. And I've said that, I've said it dozens of times since then, because it was a real mind shift for me, right? Because, my statement to my family was like, look, there's no right or wrong way to grieve. We're just going to get through this together. And, I hit the bottle and that was the wrong way to grieve. Right. So luckily that was very short lived, but, man, I'm super excited to have
love you
here.
I'm very privileged to get to hang out with you, to get to work out with you, to drink coffee with you, to have tacos with you, but most of all to have time, which is our most precious commodity.
It is, man. And I know how busy you are, all the things that you have going on. And so the fact that you made time to do this is really meaningful.
Yeah.
So I appreciate
that. My pleasure. It's an important topic.
It is. Yeah. I agree 100%.
And I love the idea of this podcast. Great name too. Where did you come up with that?
The, right there on Connor's plate carrier.
Sick.
Right?
Yeah.
So, his blood type is B positive. And when I was going through all his personal stuff, I found that patch and it's still like, it's my most prized possession. I'm actually getting it tattooed, right after 4th of July. I'm getting it tattooed on my chest. So really, I'm super stoked about it. But yeah, when I found that patch, I showed it to Rochelle and Rochelle was like, oh, look at that, B-pause. Like Connor was the most positive person we knew.
That's 100% the truth.
Yeah. So I just kind of make it my mantra.
I love it.
Yeah. Try to live by that. I think one of the things that I want to try and accomplish with the podcast is I don't have even a full year under my belt yet of experiences, but the things that I have experienced, I want to make sure I share them because, I'm already getting feedback from people like, wow, I never really thought about that. Mm-hmm. Or I didn't even consider this. Or what I want to do though, is I want to talk with people who have other experiences surrounding, loss and grief and all that sort of stuff. And somebody like you, you've seen a lot. You've seen a whole lot. Going to war and the things that happened there. you know, there's a lot to unpack, right?
Yeah.
And especially, I think, being in the military, it's not really part of the culture to, you know, grab one of your buddies and say, hey, man, I'm feeling really bummed out right now because of this. I mean, you acknowledge what happened and then you try and, yeah. you know, for best you can put it out of your mind, maybe.
Yeah. That's not a healthy thing.
Yeah. Right.
In the right and wrong ways to grieve, the like not addressing it falls into the not right category.
Yes.
You know, like, oh, I'll deal with it later. It's a self-preservation mechanism in the military where, because we have to go and continue to do the work. Sometimes we don't have the time to deal with it at that moment, yep. but like, let's be honest, you got to deal with it eventually.
Yes.
And we have seen this horrific systemic problem of, and it is a social contagion as well. Depression, unhealthy coping mechanisms, and the military culture has been experiencing that for the past decade.
Yeah.
Eventually you got to deal with it, you know? So like you can deal with it now. There might not be time for that, or you're going to have to deal with it later, but eventually one way or another, you're going to have to deal with it.
I could not agree more with that statement. And it's something that I know that I struggle with personally, because sometimes I just don't want to be sad.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly if I'm around my family, I don't want to make them sad.
Yeah.
So I try to suppress it. And man, you're right. It's a ticking time bomb. Like yeah. it's going to come out at some point. I'd rather have it come out in a controlled environment.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, pain and hate are the only things that will absolutely destroy the vessel that they're in when they're kept inside of it. You know, that is something that has to be released. If you leave those things inside of you, it will rot you to the core. You know, it will erode and poison every element of the vessel that it's in, which is you. Yeah. So like it can't remain in there. I'm not the authority. I don't have a monopoly on pain solutions, coping mechanisms. But it has been something that has been in my life for as long as I can remember. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I was 4 or 5 years old. I'm in Colorado Springs when Christmas morning, when I hear my Aunt Peggy start screaming at the top of her lungs, the whole house wakes up. My dad runs down. He starts doing CPR on his mom. Like, this is my grandma. This is like one of my first formative memories. You know, fast forward to me being like, I'm in elementary school when my best friend, Nathan Stewart, his mom, Carol Lee Stewart, gets hit by a boat while she's scuba diving with her husband, Wayne Stewart, in Morro Bay, California. My surfing spot, my scuba spot. Like The Rock, our beach house is in Cambria, California, which is like the next beach just north. So like one of my favorite places ultimately in the book where I go and swim due west into the fog in one of the darkest moments of my life.
Yep.
That's from Morro Bay, where Carol Lee died when I was in elementary school. You know, go forward a couple of years. I'm 15 years old when Jared Cunningham in December is driving with his brother, and like, my best friend dies in a car crash.
Yeah.
And watching his mom, who is like my second mom, you know, like look at me with shark eyes, not even able to look at, you know, one of her son's friends that has been to her house a million times, yeah. like slept in her bed. You know, like I've woken up with a nightmare as a, you know, as a kid, and run in there and hop in there with Lee and Debbie, and, you know, and now she can't even look at me.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
So then fast forward to me being a firefighter. I'm young, 18, firefighter EMT, vehicle rollover on 101 southbound and just south of Atascadero, California. It was a school. It was a church missions trip. The whole car, the whole van, 15-passenger van, was packed with women and children coming back from a mission trip. You know, trying to do CPR and fix these broken little tiny bodies, you know, to then the last few months as a firefighter, walking into an apartment where a meth head had put a little baby in an oven. You know, like, just this has been in my life for forever. And when I came home from a really, really bad call, a multi-casualty incident, you know, my dad answered the door. My dad was a police officer, narcotics officer. He's like during the peak war on drugs. You know, he found the cartel doing terrible things to informants. So like those, he was intimately familiar with pain. Imagine doing CPR to your own mom. And I come home from this bad call. I'm covered in dirt and blood. Evidently I had no recollection of this. I'm crying, like bawling, can barely open the door. My dad opens the door for me. And I'm like, he's like, my captain, Keith Agassin, had already called the house and told him that he needed to check on me.
Yeah.
So I come home and I'm like, no, I'm fine. And he's like, son, like, you're not fine. Yeah. Like, you can barely walk. You know, I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I still like remember that I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm fine. And I'm sitting there bawling, shaking, can't open a door. And my dad's like, you're not fine. Just come inside.
Yeah.
You know? But man, I'm not the authority, you know, and none of us are.
No. And yeah. And I made this very clear at the, you know, beginning of the podcast, like, I'm not a doctor or therapist or anything like that. I'm just a dude who lost a son. And now I'm just trying to share stories with people and share things that I'm learning and, you know, maybe ways to cope.
Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, going back to the story of, you coming home, telling your dad you're fine, him saying you're not.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he took the role of, okay, you're not okay, so come on in and I'm going to support you.
Yeah.
And so, like, how important is that type of support in moments like that?
Man. So the right ways and wrong ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like even the word ways, because there's what seems like millions of possibilities in positive influences, ways to express positive, like in the positive category, you know, like having a close family that loves you, having friends that can support you, having a community and a tribe that will grieve with you, having like just in the people thing, like that is so vital.
Mm-hmm.
In the military, we do have a great culture of we're so tight, you know, fighters, CrossFit, jiu-jitsu communities, yoga studios, like all of those are little tiny tribes that when catastrophe happens can rise to the occasion.
Absolutely.
They don't always. Shame on them when they don't.
Right.
But they can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, there's families that also can collapse under the weight and burden of pain.
Yeah.
Or they can, you know, like get stronger than they've ever been.
Yeah. Yeah. It can definitely go. I've seen it go both ways, you know, personally, with people I know. So yeah, I think that's super accurate.
Thinking back to when Connor passed, I'm sure, and we're not calling him out, that you had what were close friends that, or maybe didn't, and that's incredible, that didn't know how to reach out to you.
Sure.
And it's totally fine. Like, we're not judging them. I'm not disparaging them, you know, but like they didn't have the emotional capability or the emotional intelligence to know how to interact with you kind of moving forward.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Like, they got things to figure out, just like we have things to figure out. But then there were others that were like, hey, what are you doing?
Right.
How are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, what's going on right now?
Yeah.
And they're both important people, but I'm assuming that your life and those in your life have changed.
Oh, for sure.
And that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I tell people all the time, like, I'm a different person. I'll never be the same person I was before. Good, bad, or indifferent. It's just, you know, I'm changed forever. Yeah. And you're right. I did, you know, fortunately for me, we had, and you know, because we know a lot of the same people, but we had, you know, we had a really great outpouring, you know, people supporting us. And, you know, it's really interesting because there is the, like, you know, I didn't reach out because I didn't know what to say type of thing, which I get it. It's uncomfortable, but dude, you know, I just tell people, get out of your comfort zone. You know, when you have somebody that you really care about and they go through some sort of shit.
You don't have to say the right thing.
Yeah. You just got to say something.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's that. And then, man, to the flip side, you know, I've had people like my cousin just reached out to me last week. And she actually wrote this really beautiful letter to Rochelle and I. And she's, you know, she checks in with me and we grew up together, right? She's just a couple years younger than I am. But, you know, we're more like brother and sister than cousins. And she was like, hey, I just want you to know, you know, I'm not trying to be a pest. I just want you to know that I'm thinking about you guys. And that's why I reach out, but I don't, you know, if I'm being intrusive or invasive or whatever. And it's like, come on, come on, Stephanie, you're not being intrusive or invasive. I know exactly what you're doing and we appreciate it.
Yeah.
So I don't, to your point, I don't think that, I don't think you can reach out to somebody too much. It just, you know, you can't, in my opinion.
How you do it. I would never say that I have intelligence in anything, specifically emotional intelligence. But I can say with complete confidence that like the people that I reach out to, I truly love.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about a friend right before we went on the podcast that's going through some stuff right now. And, you know, like the ways that I reach out to him, are vastly different. The relationship that I have with him is different than the relationship I have with you. You know, it usually opens with like, hey, stupid, I think you're retarded and I hope you die of chlamydia. How's your day? You know, like,
right.
But like we went to sniper school together, you know, like we literally high-fived as he's coming into Iraq and I'm leaving Iraq, you know, it's like we have very different interactions. But the goal is still the same. Like, hey, you're going through some shit right now. I love you. I'll, you know, bury a body for you. Like that's for real. But tell me how I can help.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the other things that I wanted to talk about, because you've talked about it in the past in, and then you mentioned it to me the first time we went and worked out, you know, you were talking about different ways, different physical activities that I should be looking into for strictly for my mental health and emotional health. Right. And so I definitely want to talk about, you know, physical activity and fitness and things like that, because I really do. I've told this story a few times and I'm really hoping to get him on the podcast, but there's this 75 hard program that Andy Frazella came up with. And
I was just texting him like 2 days ago.
Were you really?
Yeah.
I want him on the podcast.
Okay. He's a great human.
I was within 5 feet of him a couple weekends ago. I went up to their Summer Smash event.
Yeah.
And I was telling Cole, I was like, I took Cole with me. I said, I really want
to do this podcast. Do you hear me?
I told Cole, I said, I really want to go talk to him, man, and tell him, you know, that what 75 hard meant to me. And Cole was like, go talk to him. And I was like, all right. And man, as soon as I got like within 5 feet of him, he ducked into a door into the warehouse and I didn't get my chance. But
his wife's awesome too.
I haven't met her.
And she's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Big book club and she's neat.
Yeah. It's the culture they built at that company is, I mean, it's mind blowing, man. It's really, you want to talk about, we had that conversation, you know, most interesting person.
Yeah.
He could be on my list as one of the most interesting people for sure.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah. But that, you know, 75 hard program, Connor and I were going to do that together. And then of course it was, well, you know, I'm starting this phase of flight school, so it's not a good time. Or I'm like, well, you know, we're getting ready to go on vacation. It's not, you know, it was never a good time. And then we didn't get to do it together.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, you know what, man, I'm going to do it. And luckily Rochelle jumped in with me. My friends, Kim and Angel, they jumped in and, dude, that 75 days of the discipline, the physical activity, you know, the discipline in what I was eating, and drinking, the discipline in reading every day, you know, the cold showers, you know, and you're the one that sent me the podcast about cold plunging, Huberman's mm-hmm. podcast, which is fascinating. Which that's another one. And I'll ping you to try and get somebody who, like, you know, one of these cold plunge people or companies or something like that on to talk about what cold plunging does for yep. you neurologically. That'd be awesome. Anyway, point is the physical activity, man, like it, I was in a bad place mm-hmm. as anyone could imagine. And that completely changed my trajectory, I think. I was not heading in the right direction for sure. But then diving into that program and all that sort of stuff, it made a huge difference.
Yeah. And I almost need a whiteboard because as I'm writing the second book, I've conceptualized, you know, if you imagine like your human baseline, right? Like this is how much sleep do you get in a night? Do you use drugs? Do you drink? Do you use tobacco? Are you cheating on your wife? How is your business going? What is the stress, anxiety, like your natural resting cortisol levels? You know, you got a side chick, like it's absolutely going to be higher. You know, you got all of the things that create stress into your life, both physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually. That is your standard baseline, right? So, again, like I'm not good at a lot. I'm not the authority or I don't have the monopoly of these ideas. But I have seen this, not anecdotally, but I've seen this across thousands of lives in special operations, in contracting, in the entrepreneurial world. Mm-hmm. And those that keep a remarkably higher baseline, like they're a healthier person that gets great natural sleep, they're monogamous with their spouse, they go to church, they have a great relationship with their family. These are all coping mechanisms that we know in grief or in trauma, post-traumatic stress, like people that have more of those deal with those stresses better. Well, they have like a normal, natural, healthier baseline. So like the healthier you are as a person, the better probably you're going to be able to do dealing with stresses and traumas that come.
Okay. Right?
So we set a healthy baseline. Like that has to be physical activity. That has to be going outside. That has to be eating clean. That has to be not drinking alcohol, that not doing lines of coke, you know, in the middle of the afternoon or like hit a bump before I go to a party, right? Like these are all like, seems so common sense, right. But like these are absolutes. And the better you are, the better positioned you are to deal with trauma and to deal with things. But then when the trauma happens, now you have a seemingly endless, this litany of options in those two categories of good or bad. Because now I go, okay, here's my baseline. Well, now where's my trajectory of my choices? Not that every choice is going to like send me in a dramatic, every one of my decisions is going to send me in a dramatic direction, but it starts becoming a slippery slope.
Yeah.
Where like, okay, I'm gonna pull a cork. Then I'm going to fight with my wife. Then I'm not going to sleep well tonight. Then I'm not going to exercise in the morning. Now I'm hungover, so I'm not going to sleep well. Now I'm going to sleep the next day. And it starts this snowballing effect where now go down the road six weeks from then. Now you're like in a really bad place. Yeah. And the intervention is like, hey, instead of Mike, do you want to go grab a cup of coffee after we work out? It's like, I'm picking you up from the couch or I'm picking you up from jail or you just got arrested for a DUI and it's like vastly different.
Yeah.
And it all started one with the baseline and then two with these million little decisions that led ultimately to like catastrophic failure, anarchy, chaos, death, depression, suicide. And it's like,
You know, it's I can tell you from personal experience, you know, after finishing 75 hard, I was like, all right, I'm going to tap the brakes a little bit and just, you know, kind of celebrate. And, you know, I'm a craft beer guy. Like I love craft beer. I love the taste of craft beer and all that sort of stuff. But man, you know, as soon as I started drinking beer again, it was like everything that I accomplished over, you know, 2+ months, like within 2 weekends was not negated, but you know what I mean, man. It definitely, the trajectory changed to your point for sure.
And you know, I'm sure if you think back to you know, you pop that one craft beer, and then what are you going to eat with that beer is going to be different than what you're going to be eating. And then that night when you go to sleep, now that you've had some fried food, some high fat food, a bunch of beer, which is a depressant, which will interrupt your REM, 100%. Your recovery. So like there's that. And it's just not that that one decision was the thing that caused it. And it wasn't like the catalyst that changed everything, but it was in a line of decisions that started leading you one way or another.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I had buffalo wings.
There you go.
Yeah. So I think you just,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree 100%, man. And it is, it is the little things.
It's always the little things.
It's always the little things. Yeah.
It's the little things in business. It's the little things in a relationship. It's, you know, to be a good husband, to be a good father, to, you know, grieve. It's the little things.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're, obviously, I mean, you're well known for a whole bunch of things.
Not all good things.
Well, depends on who you talk to.
Yeah.
So you're a serial entrepreneur. I mean, like, it's insane. I don't think people understand how many businesses you have started and run or involved in. You're a prolific content creator. I mean, you know, you've come up with TV shows and, you know, you do interviews on news channels and you travel and you speak. You started a school, which I want to talk about because I think that's, you know, you want to talk about like baseline, starting young.
Yeah.
I want to learn more about that because I'm so intrigued. You're a best-selling author, right? This book, Scars and Stripes, I mean, it was amazing. And this is actually the copy that you signed for Connor. So he almost finished it, man. He was down to page 384. So he was close, super close. And then you have a second book in the works, which I think is titled really well for the stuff we're going to be talking about or that we're talking about now. But let's start with the business side of things. So how did you end up going from, you know, special forces guy, you know, UFC fighter, MMA champion, to being a serial entrepreneur?
Yeah. Special operations, they're problem solvers. You know, we're going to give you limited resources, limited personnel, and we're going to put you in a place that is austere, that is not conducive for your success. Yep. And you need to do this thing, accomplish this mission. I mean, that sounds like starting a business.
Figure it out.
As an entrepreneur, like you're not going to have enough of this stuff. You're not going to have enough of the people. You're going to be in an environment that does not want you to succeed, which is current American economics.
Yeah.
And, you know, buena suerte. Good luck. Figure it out. So it is, we see lots of people from the special operations community that do really well in this entrepreneurial world. We don't like rules. We don't like authority.
Yeah.
We want to be our own bosses. We want to problem solve. We don't work on regular schedules. We don't need a 9-to-5. I don't need a paycheck. You know, there have been many months where I was like, Ginger, we're not getting paid. We got to make payroll.
Yeah.
You know, like we're taking out of our personal savings to cover payroll. Yep. You know, like going through inflation, like, I don't know what it's like for you, but inflation right now, it is not 20%. You know, it's in my world, it's about 100-150% in 4 years.
Yeah.
And I'm not raising my prices fast enough to be able to get anywhere near the, like I went from like a 50-60% margin to an 8% margin.
Oh.
in three years. And I've raised my prices twice.
Good God.
And you know, like, oh, like, why aren't you running more courses? It's like, because I make 8%, man. You know, like the risk, the juice isn't worth the squeeze right now.
Yeah.
But if I don't run courses, then I can't pay the overhead. I can't pay my instructors. They can't pay their mortgages.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, it's hard. But the military gave me all, not all, it'd be awesome, but a lot of the tools to be all right at business. Mm-hmm. And the most important one is leadership. There's very few places in the world right now that teach management, program management, yep. you know, like middle management, but most importantly, leadership. And nobody does better than the U.S. military.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. I think that the things that you can learn there and how fast it can make, especially a younger person grow up mm-hmm. is pretty.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
Yeah. I recommend it for every young man and woman, you know, like, what should I do with my life? If that is your question, go to the military, you'll figure it out. And then you can go to school and they'll pay for it. And then you can run your life and you'll be like so far ahead of everyone else.
Yeah. I totally agree.
It's a superpower.
Yeah. Which is crazy to think of, right?
Yeah.
You know, when you're there in the military, you have no idea. Yeah, you don't think, oh, this is great. I'm learning so much that I can apply to the rest of my life. You're like, oh, man, again?
Dude, how hard it is right now in 2024 to get somebody that will show up at the right time, at the right place, with the right equipment and uniform just to do their job.
Yeah.
Those three basic things. And that is day two of being in the Army. You will be really good at those things.
Or else.
Yeah, you'll be at the right place at the right time
with
the right equipment, or you'll just be getting scuffed up every which way.
There will be consequences if you're not.
And they'll fix it. And they'll fix you.
Yeah.
And then you'll be at the right place at the right time with the right uniform. Like, that's all we're asking as businessmen now is, like, can you show up at this place to do this job at this time with this equipment?
Yeah.
That's not asking a lot, but evidently it is asking more than most are able to give right now.
Yep.
And you'll be wicked good at those things post-military.
Yes. Amen. All right. So you mentioned leadership, which we had this conversation, you know, we don't just talk about, you know, grief and that sort of stuff when we get together. We also talk about business and, you know, coffee. You're a coffee nerd, I think.
You're a coffee nerd. I'm a coffee appreciator.
Okay, fair enough. My experience with business recently, and I've talked to several people who have scaled businesses, right? So there's starting a business, running a business, growing a business, and then there's scaling a business, and they're all super, super different. And I think one of the things that I've learned, you know, here in the last year probably, scaling a business, leadership is paramount. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you don't have it, it's a house of cards.
Yeah.
So how do you address that?
Well, the hard part is that I have multiple businesses that are in different phases that you just listed.
Yeah.
So, like, I have three that are growing, I have two that are scaling, and I have two that I'm running, you know, and running a business usually takes all available bandwidth.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, then you have eight companies that are in different phases of those things, you know, like, I can't hire fast enough, can't hire the right amount of right people in the right amounts fast enough. You know, on the cash flow questions of, like, when you have rapid expansion and scaling, you know, where I've been a bootstrap guy my whole entire life, like, no loans, you know, no outside anything. I've done everything personally. And now your questions where you're about to add commas, it's like, okay, do I have to, I guess I have to do this. Yeah. Like, this is the only way to scale. But then do I lose sovereignty? Like, do I lose any degree of control, which I will not abide to relinquish any form of control over what I built?
Yep.
So it's like, I don't know.
It's a conundrum.
It is.
Yeah.
But fortunately, we know, like, really good people that have done it successfully, and then I just try to copy what they've done.
Yeah. It's so, and, you know, you had mentioned a couple times that, you know, you're not at the authority, you don't have the corner on, you know, the stuff that we're talking about, but what you have, and I think is more valuable than anything else, you have experience. And that's what this is all about. It's really, you know, we're not trying to you know, puff up our egos here and act like we're, you know, the end all be all, the authority or anything. It's really like, hey, look, this is what I've learned from other people, from personal experience. I'm just going to share it. And you know what? Some people are going to love it. Some people are going to hate it. Whatever, you know, take it or leave it.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about Apogee, right? So
what, one of the scaling businesses.
Yeah.
Man, that thing exploded.
That exploded.
Yeah. We haven't even abolished the Department of Education yet, which is one of our 5-year goals. We're only year two. We have 3 years to make sure they go away.
But. So, all right. Talk to me about what was the genesis of that?
Failing children.
Yeah.
Like just looking out into the world and be like, man, I don't know what's going on, but the system's broken.
Yep.
You know, what we are producing at the end of this conveyor belt that is our current education system, the end product is not useful. You know, like I don't need a lemming that can sit there and that has been taught and prepared to take a test. I need somebody that can collaborate, that can innovate, that can work, that can problem solve, that can critically think. And somebody coming from the conveyor belt school, public school system has never done any of those things. Yep. They've been told where to sit, what pencil to use, how to fill out a very specified form. That does not apply to anything in the world. You know, when somebody shows up to my office, I'm not going to tell them what pencil to use. I'm not going to tell them what paper to use. I'm not going to like give them a desk.
Yeah.
Like you tell me how you can work the best and most effectively and most efficiently, like, but you don't know how to do that because you've never done it.
Right.
And so Apogee, another thing that we have, Matt Boudreau and myself, my partner in Apogee. So I started one school, Matt was running these big Socratic schools on the West Coast, and we meet up for coffee and tacos. We work out real hard, nasty workouts. You know, you get a little peek into somebody's character and soul when you're doing a workout. Like, are they counting their reps? Are they respectfully talking to other people around them? Are they being disgusting slobs, like leaving their sweat and spit next to, you know, you saw me, I'm working out next to Emily. Never met her before. Her husband's been to one of our courses. So like, we kind of like by degree know of each other,
sure,
but have never met. You know, I didn't drop any sweat or my towel on her face or fall on top of her, you know, am I positively reinforcing one of her reps? Is I was trying to keep up with her. I didn't recognize that she was doing fewer reps on the handstand pushups. So I was just trying to go and pace with her, to stay with the number of rounds that we were doing.
Right.
So at the end, we're like, all right, how many rounds and reps did you do? I was like, Emily, what did we do? I said, we're on set 4. I'm like, all right, well, I did 2 burpees. So that's 28 plus 2. That's, you know, 4 sets plus 30.
Yeah.
So you get a little snapshot into somebody's character. So worked out with Matt, went and had coffee, another great opportunity to learn about a person. And I do this with everybody that I'm ever going to hire is I take them out to eat. I look how they treat a server. I look how they make a decision on a menu. Like if they're sitting there and they're like, oh, well, and they're being super problematic and they can't make a simple decision about like what they're going to eat, you know, but then I'm going to employ them and I'm going to expect them to make like complex decisions involving other people and then people that they don't know. Yeah. It's another great snapshot into like, who is this person that's sitting across from me and how does that person interact with other people in this world? And that snapshot into somebody from the gym, from going out to eat, seeing how they make decisions, interact with people, how fast they make a decision. Like those are great things. So I had done my due diligence on Matt, knew about how the schools had operated, how he was as a leader, as he was exiting, he was gifting the entire gigantic campuses back to the teachers. I was like, all right, this guy's rad.
Interesting.
And he and I really aligned on one very important thing, which separated us from most private schools, which was that we really believed that the nuclear family was the cornerstone to the success of the child.
Okay.
The involvement of the parents, the being present, intentionally present, disciplined and present, not how they disciplined, but like that they were disciplined in how they interacted with their children.
Right.
It's not like, hey, drop your kids off and they're going to turn out great. You know, you great old school quote, you know, if you send your kids to Caesar, you're going to get a Roman back. And that's what we've been doing.
Yeah.
For 60 years, we've just been sending our kids away and what we've been receiving is not useful. That's the beginning of Apogee.
Okay.
It was Matt and I after a workout with coffee and tacos and we're just like kind of going at it about like, okay, well, how are we going to fix this? What are we going to do? So then we started this mentorship program. I have my school. He starts running the online mentorship program. And we like, how do we fuse these things together? Physical campuses with the intentionality of present parents in the home, men taking leaderships in their home, women falling in 100% authority as to where they stand as contributing members of their household. Yep. Like no longer am I like going to drop my kids off, go get my Starbucks in one of those little dumb cups that has all the accessories, you know, go do their class, check out, start drinking rosés or, you know, white wine by 2 o'clock, pick up the kids, you know, at 0.6 blood alcohol by 3:30, take them to their first thing and then pass out. And that's their day. You know, like, sorry, ladies, does not qualify. Husbands, you know, you thinking that you're just working from 9 to 5 and that's your version of contribution. Right. Sorry, man, that's not enough. We need more out from you. And we just went at it hard. Like all of our beliefs were really aligned. All of our values were really aligned. And okay, well, how do we create a system and a process that we can hand off to a household that they can just grab and start executing? That was the beginning of Apogee.
Yep.
So we went from, you know, mentorship to then, okay, who wants to open a school? And it went, you know, we had 1,000 places apply. We picked our top 50.
Wow.
Year two. Then year three, we're going to be opening 300 to 400 schools. And then we'll be opening kind of like our flagship school here in Liberty Hill, 20 acres, you know, 1,000 hero stud leader campus. And it's going, man.
That's insane.
Yep.
So, and these schools are all over the U.S. Mm-hmm. Wow. And are they franchises or how does that work? License agreements?
They're affiliates.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, they have, because we believe in sovereignty, I am not going to require, I want them, they own that location. Like who's starting that school? That is theirs.
Okay.
They're licensing the name there and then they're, leasing the idea,
okay.
Like the curriculum, the system, the process.
Got it.
So what curriculum they're going to be using, how they're going to be doing their mentorship, what are the Socratic questions, how are they going to be, like the we're going to be very heavy in physical education, like JFK era physical fitness standards.
Okay.
We've partnered with the best and the brightest in early children development physically. Like how do we pair? These are mutually complementary things where you have a very physically fit person. Usually, more often than not, that person is more capable to deal with a heavy burden of intellectual and educational studies.
Yeah.
So as we see in the military, especially with like high level pilots, for example, like the burden of them intellectually, educationally is extraordinary. The right. things that like they're memorizing these gigantic manuals on their aircraft. And they're being tested in real time under the most extraordinary circumstances. Well, they're capable of doing that because they're also physical freaks.
Right.
And these are complementary things.
Yeah.
So we used to be that way in our schools. We stopped doing that around 1970. And then our kids have just gotten fatter and dumber as time has gone on. So we're done with that. So Apogee is attacking the house. It's attacking the physical nature of the individual and then intellectually creating critical thinkers.
Yep. That's huge. I know it really amazes me sometimes, just my own personal experience, you know, being employed by somebody, you know, with other people or being an employer, how almost non-existent critical thinking is these days. I mean, simplest problems and people either avoid them or they melt down.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
You can take any one of our young leaders and there's a bunch of fun tests that they do in like MBA programs. You get string, some tape and spaghetti. How tall?
Oh yeah. Like, I've done one of those. Yeah.
Our young leaders will never be beaten. They'll never be beaten. And you can pick any one of any of those dumb little things and put them against MBA graduates. It doesn't matter. our young leaders will destroy you. They are just, we never tell them where to sit. We don't, they make millions of little decisions in a day. And they have consequences.
Right.
Like, you know, Johnny wants to go outside and play, but like Johnny didn't do his work. So like, sorry, man, like you were over in the corner farting around, yeah, not doing your work. Those were your choices. And what, but everything's posed as a question to them. Well, what were some of the choices that you made that didn't allow you to get your work done?
Yep.
You know, then they have to sit there and they're thinking, they're critically thinking and they're recognizing, they're being self-aware, like, oh, well, you know, I was over here doing this, I was over here doing that. I'm like, but what were you doing? Still forms of questions.
Yeah.
And they recognize that they messed up.
It's so amazing. It seems so basic. Like, you're empowering them, right? And when you empower somebody, when you truly empower somebody, you also give them the opportunity to fail.
Absolutely.
And that just doesn't like, there's this mentality that, you know, a kid can't fail because it'll destroy them. Right. You know, emotionally.
We currently have national projects that are called no fail programs for schools. No kid left behind. Like, no, that is absolutely the opposite of what you should be doing. There should be kids that are left behind.
Right.
There should be kids that fail, that struggle, that suffer. The only thing worse than a helicopter parent is a snowplow parent. A snowplow parent is somebody that goes ahead of their child and removes all adversity, all right, conflict. So that child never has to struggle. They never have to work through and problem solve. They never have to fail.
Yeah.
We're taking the opposite approach here. I'm not like forcing a kid to failure. I'm not rushing them to struggling, but like, right, I 100% am allowing them to work through their own failures and problem solve their own solutions. And if there are no problems, how can they learn to problem solve? Right.
Yeah, good question.
Like, these are mutually exclusive things. Like, if I, yeah, give them all the solutions, if I show them how to take a test, if I show them how to fill out the form, if I show them what pencil to use, I'm not teaching them how to think. I'm teaching them how to answer a test.
Right.
That does not replicate anywhere in real business or in real society.
Yeah.
You know, and this is the idea around my next book is The Purpose of Pain, is like their pain and struggling and adversity and conflict, that is the catalyst for adaptation. Like, just in evolution, the only way that the pigment in our skin, the way that we're shaped, the way that we as a species have transformed is because of the modality in the environment and the area that we lived in.
Right.
Right. So why does a marathoner look different than a power lifter? It's because of the differences of pain that they've put their body through.
Okay.
Right. Our muscles fail. They literally tear inside of them and they go like, whoa, well, that was a unique experience. I have to grow back in a different way to be able to do that thing better. And then my body changes. I think that when I go and I touch a stove and I burn my hand, I'm like, ooh, that was hot. I now just taught myself via pain that I can't touch that stone. And I then have transformed. I like my brain and all of my neurons have recognized that I don't put my hand on a hot stove.
Yep.
I go and I date this like super hot Latino girl when I was 19 years old. She was like 4 years older than me. She's like 11 on the 10 scale. But on the crazy line, you know, yes, there's that like point of departure.
Hot where, crazy
like,
matrix.
Yeah, yeah. And I went to like the fuck around and find out portion. I was on the wrong end of that matrix. And, you know, as she's like hooking up with this young fighter, you know, that's a few years younger than her, she's absolutely doing it with all the other ones. You know, so like, it really hurt my feelings that she's cheating on me with like 9 other dudes. Well, man, I should have known, you know, but like, I emotionally have learned my lesson. And like, the list goes on and on and on of all of the ways that I've been hurt. And then I grew back stronger.
Yeah.
And I changed and I transformed just like you are. And we have, as a society, done a really dangerous thing. We have been diluting. We have been ignoring. We have been burying. We have been siloing. We have been drinking. We have been sedating the pain,
mm-hmm,
thinking that it makes it better.
Yep.
And that is the worst thing you can possibly do. The best thing that you can do is recognize that this pain is so important. I'm not saying to embrace it. Like, that's also okay. Like, they're like, embrace the suffering, and but recognizing its importance is, I think, paramount.
Yeah. It never goes away.
No.
Right. So avoiding it is literally just kicking the can down the road. And I think it just, honestly, I think it just gets worse if you avoid it. Right.
And that like spectrum of pain is so endless.
Yeah.
You know, like my wife has, she got some pretty serious trauma from her past, you know? And I think to my friends like Justin and Chantry, who were all but abandoned as children in middle school. And like some of their first memories are like the most horrific things that you can imagine from foster care and living on the street. And now like their most powerful, strong leaders of their household and their communities and great entrepreneurs. And like had you taken those things from their past, like would they be the same person that they are today? Like I looked at every single special operations group on the planet, from Navy SEALs, the Green Berets, special missions units. And like, what is a really common theme amongst all of them? Their selections are horrible.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They're notoriously, infamously horrible. Right. Like they have names and like there's events in the selections that are like famous because of the high, the attrition rate is them. But we recognize that those are absolute must moments for the transformation of the person. It's not a selection.
Right.
It's a transforming event. We're giving them pain, which will transform them on the far side of it. So we're not selecting them. They're self-selecting themselves. But on the far side of pain is a better version of them. So that pain serves such a significant purpose.
Yeah.
And your pain. And like, if you look at our hands right now, like this is from those are new. You can see my old ones. Yeah. All of these calluses are from things that I do regularly.
Right.
So my body and my hands have transformed because of a pain. Well, here's a new pain.
Right.
If I do that regularly, I'll have a different form of callus. And not that we should be callous to a thing, but we should be tough enough to adapt and deal with it.
Yeah.
And that is a beautiful transformation.
Yeah. It's one of the things that I definitely wanted to circle back on, and you mentioned physical activity at the school. Right? Because I really believe, and in keeping in line with, you know, different ways to manage grief. And look, this isn't, there is no one answer. There's no silver bullet, right? I just firmly believe from my personal experience that like without some sort of physical activity, it's a uphill battle, right? And not that physical activity, you know, makes everything perfect, but that doing something challenging, to your point, you know, taking your body, and I'm not talking about like destroying your body and just every single day, you know, beating yourself into the ground to the point where you can't get out of bed the next morning, but challenging yourself every day and knowing that you can do just a little bit more than you think you can do. And then when you eventually do that, it's like, holy shit, like I had no idea I could do that. Mm-hmm. And then it just continues to build. And so one of the things you touched on earlier, and I've heard other people say this, like if you have a strong body, your mind follows, mm-hmm. right? It just happens.
It's not the other way around.
Right. Exactly.
To become a mentally resilient, mentally strong person, it's because it's a byproduct of what you can physically do and the hardships that you've endured. So like if you want somebody that's tough, give them adversity.
Yeah.
You know, if you want somebody that is kind, give them opportunity to show grace. You know, if you want somebody that is generous, doesn't make them rich, let them know what it's like to be poor. You know, if you, and all of those are forms of adversity in different categories. And so like, if I want to be mentally strong, to be able to handle traumas and grief, man, like give me somebody that's physically tough.
Yeah. So in school, like what kinds of things do you do? You know, cause I remember, you know, Connor and Cole going through school and the like the minimal amount of PE.
It's all gone now.
Is it really?
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
No, I mean, that was 7 years ago for your kids.
Yeah.
In 7 years, it's all gone. There's no requirements. There's no like pass a mile run. The PE is gone.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So you're addressing that, which is great. I had no idea. I had no idea. So how, number one, how do you present that to the parents and to the kids, especially the kids when, you know, their friends who don't go to Apogee, you know, are like, huh, you have to do what?
Yeah.
So yeah, let's start with that. How do you present that to them?
It very quickly becomes a badge of courage. Like our young learners, our little young leaders, they know they're different. They look different. They talk different. Yeah. They think different. And they're like, they're okay. They're not judging, you know, they're showing grace, but they 100% know that they're reading above everybody else. They're doing math that none of their other friends can do. You know, they're speaking languages that none of their other friends can do. They physically look different than all of their friends. And their home life is as different as their friends' lives, in a really positive way.
Okay.
And that was, I think, something that has been missing, which is the responsibility of the parent to be like, well, I have to lead. Like the most important thing about the health of the children is the health of the mother. For the mother to have time to do fitness financially, they have to be in a position that allows her to have 90 minutes in a day to go and be physically fit. So that means that they have to be financially stable. You know, like she maybe doesn't have to go to work for 8 hours a day. Maybe she's only working 4 hours or supporting her husband in a beautiful supporting role. Like any of those things are fine, but like that we know the mother has to be fit. It's awesome that the dad's fit because the dad has to provide, the dad has to protect, the dad has to preserve. That's his job. He has to. But the mother has often been overlooked. And when you look at households that are struggling and you see divorces start popping up and you see two very unhealthy people, how they're sleeping, how they're drinking, how they're exercising, what their interactions are, it's a very telling thing is how does one spouse respond to another spouse? And this is just an emotional intelligence that can't exist without normal functioning human behavior. So how do we introduce it? It's pretty matter of fact. Like your kids are going to struggle. Like they're going to have,
be ready.
They're going to have bruises on their body that not from us, from them. Yeah. Like there are rope swings that are in the trees and those are not allowed at regular schools because kids get hurt.
Yes.
You know, like we've had teeth hey, you need to come pick up your leader and take him to the dentist because he just knocked his tooth out because the swing swung back as they're trying to do backflips off of it.
Right.
You know, like, oh, and the counselors, the leaders and the mentors at the studios on the campus, like their job isn't to like teach and to restrict. Theirs is to guide.
Right.
You know, and because you can't, again, be snow plowing all adversity out of their lives. But we also don't want them to like be losing eyes and like breaking arms.
Running out to the middle of the highway or anything. Yeah.
So it's a really fine balance. The pendulum has swung too far to this risk adverse side that isn't useful.
Right.
And we want the parents to be so intimately involved in all of this that they're bought into it.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, yeah, Joey's crazy. You know, of course he's trying to do a backflip. He tried to do it the other day at the house. All right. He'll be all right.
Yeah. Look, man, I think it's incredibly valuable. I'm just sitting here thinking, I'm thinking about and look, I didn't have a hard life by any stretch. I mean, I had great parents who are still together. You know, I have an amazing family, you know, all that sort of stuff. I face challenges like all of us do. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here listening to you and I'm thinking to myself, if there had been a snowplow in front of me and I didn't have to deal with all the shit that I've had to deal with, you know, throughout my life. And I experience what I experienced in November.
You're dead.
Yeah. What would happen?
Your family's broken. Your wife and your son are trying to deal with their life without a father.
Right. 100%.
Thank God for the pain that you had in your life.
Yeah.
Thank God for every time that you faced adversity. Thank God for the chaos and the anarchy. Thank God for the military. Thank God for your struggles in business. Thank God for COVID. Thank God for like the, every single one of those those moments of struggle for you transformed you.
Yeah.
And then you still beautifully and perfectly have been dealing with a new pain, you know, like it's not been perfect.
No.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, my wife, when we were in the kitchen, as she was dealing with some stuff and she's like, I am not okay. I was like, welcome to the party. You know, like, can you point to the 7 billion people on this planet to somebody that is okay?
Right.
Every single one of us is not okay. And that's okay. Every single one of us is on this beautiful journey as we're struggling and figuring and failing and freaking beautiful. That is what our species is.
Yeah.
And she just sat there. She's like, so it's okay to not be okay. And I was like, 100%. Like, one, my vows were for you, not a perfect form of you, for you.
Right.
So I'm here, period, regardless. And in that same vein of like, you will never evolve as a woman. You will never grow as a person. You will never transform into the new phase of your life without the imperfection that you're currently dealing with.
Yeah.
So I'm not asking for more pain. You know, I'm not asking for more struggles. I would love to have an easy day in business someday. But I'm also like, fucking send it, you know?
Yeah. I could not agree more. You know, and it's funny. I was just thinking, it was a couple of weeks ago. I think it was on a weekend. And you sent me a text. And this is something that I've thought about a lot, but it really hit home.
Oh, no.
When you sent me the text, you were like, hey, I'm having a bad day and I just need some perspective from you. Right. And the way that I read that is, you know what? I'm having a bad day. Guess what? There are people out there who their day is 1,000 times worse than mine. Their life is 1,000 times worse than mine, you know? So it was, it made me chuckle. You know, when you sent that, because you know, look, when you look at Tim Kennedy, you're on, like you're running a million miles an hour all the time. You know, you always have a smile on your face. You've always got, you know, some sort of witty comment to make and all that sort of stuff, but you're also human.
100%. And that was a bad day too.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounded like a terrible day.
No. And I'm not comparing pain to pain.
No.
You know, but like probably a rough day for you, you know? So like, and I didn't need to send you that text. I actually sent you that text, not for you, but for me.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, and you know, I sat there and I was like, well, with me, I'm having a rough day. You know, I was like, and I thought about you and I thought about what your day and your thoughts and what you're probably working through. And I was like, I'll just make his day worse. You know? Like, hey, Mike, I'm gonna complain to you for a second, so I sound like a little whiny bitch.
It is one of the, and look, I've said this a lot of times to people. Like, I never compare, you know, the position that I'm in. Like, I never compare suffering or grief or any of that sort of stuff in a hierarchy because there isn't one. There's absolutely not one.
Yep.
But yeah, it was. You know what? I know that you did it for you, but the reality is when you sent it to me, it's like, you know what? Tim has shitty days too. Good.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
Yeah. It's an important thing for guys coming back from combat and they saw some stuff, right? And they're like dealing with it. There's a dude that didn't get to go, and his guilt and his pain and his embarrassment is like on. Again, like I can't put this on a scale,
yeah.
But like that guy's dealing with some stuff. Like I had a friend that couldn't deploy, and his partner went and ended up getting hurt downrange. and the like survivor guilt, I argue the guy coming back that was like pretty messed up from war.
Yeah.
The dude that didn't get to go is 100% physically fine. Dude, he is dealing with some stuff.
Yeah.
And so like, again, it's like, and I love them both and they're both figuring it out. And like, they were making all of the, in the, like the two categories of like probably good and bad. They're making plenty of bad ones, you know? And it's like, yeah. No, you don't need a new car. You're like, no, you don't need that new girl. You know, like, no, you should like, that is pause.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so hard. And that trauma, pain, suffering, like that scale is just endless.
Yeah, it is endless. And I think that's why it's really important to understand different things that other people do that I can do or that you can do to help get through those challenging times.
Sweat is one of them. Sweat will heal pain.
Yep.
Like back to that pain and hate and suffering being inside of a vessel. One of the ways to get it out, one of the ways to pour it out is to sweat it out.
Sure.
You know, like I have had, you know, standing there with millions of people watching as they call out the next middleweight world champion. And I'm standing there with my hands down as they raise that dude's hand, watching my own blood drip onto my chest, you know, going to my after party as the loser of the world title and going back. And I cannot wait to get into the gym to burn out that embarrassment, to burn out that failure, to burn it, to sweat out the current pain that I'm experiencing.
Yeah.
And walking through the doors of my gym for the first time, where my team just watched me fail and I have to be so humiliated to cross that threshold. It was one of the most daunting things. Like I can't go to the gym, but I have to.
Right.
And then I go in there and it's the hardest work that I could possibly do with my swollen hands and my swollen face to try to heal. And, you know, there's something about the tears coming out of your face and the sweat coming out of those sweat glands that heal you. And I don't know why, but people don't want to do it.
Yeah.
They don't want to cry and they don't want to sweat. Do both.
Do both.
You coward.
Yeah. You know? I think it's very good advice for sure. Okay. So the new book.
Purpose of Pain.
The Purpose of Pain. That's a very good segue. Yeah. I'm excited. And then, so that book's going to come out next year.
Yep. This came out in June of 22. So we'll come out in like, I don't know, September of 25.
Okay. I can't wait.
Yeah. It's going to be it's going to be wild.
I'm hoping I get another advanced copy.
You'll get one. Yeah, for sure.
That's great. Okay. So if people want to find out about you, if they want to learn about all the different businesses you have, the school, the, you know, the supplement line, the apparel line, I mean, all that sort of stuff, where can they go?
Just go to timkennedy.com and everything's on there. But on the social media side, it's Tim Kennedy MMA.
Okay.
From my fighting days.
Yes. Yep.
And I guess there's a congressman and there's a hockey player that also share my name. So I have to fight with them over.
Oh, how funny.
But I got timkennedy.com.
Yep. You won that battle.
Kennedy MMA for social media.
Okay. Awesome. Well, Tim, once again, I know how busy you are. I know you're about to jump in the car and drive to Louisiana. So thank you so much for
a pleasure,
dude.
You're the best.
The workout, you know, the tacos, the coffee, and
my stinky shorts.
Just for coming. Yeah. I was going to talk to you about that.
They're going to go in the trash.
Just for making the time to come in here, man. It really means a lot to me. So thank you.
Love you, man.
I love you too.